So, coming up next on the stream of Freak Radio, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, also on the Huff website if you're into the archives, and that's often the easiest way to get this show. In any case, this is August 4th, 2022. We're going to be doing some covering of Berkeley and the attack on People's Park and the defense of People's Park that happened just yesterday. I don't have a lot of on-the-spot stuff. I'm going to be reading more about it, and I've tried to reach people up there, but I have not been able to so far. So maybe on Sunday I'll have a better report, though I'm told secondhand that the struggle is still going on up there. Who knows? Maybe I'll even meander up there myself and see what's cooking. In any case, you're also going to be hearing more from the Benchlands, continued discussion of the fallout from the OVO success that we had at the Coastal Commission, but what to do next. And, well, hang on and you'll find out.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So I'm going to begin by going to the People's Park website, which is peoplespark.org. And there is an alert to save People's Park. UC Berkeley construction businesses and police move to destroy Berkeley's landmark open space and community of People's Park, August 3rd. So it looks like the updates are a little out of date on this website. 1:52 p.m. yesterday, August 3rd, is the last update. I'll read, however, what is already on the website. Call in to Berkeley City Council Thursday, August 4th, 2022 at 8:15 p.m. to stop the use of tear gas, pepper spray, and smoke. Discussion and possible use regarding the temporary suspension of the June 9th, 2020 policy prohibiting the use of the tear gas, smoke, and pepper spray for the duration of the City Council recess. In other words, the City Council of Berkeley at that point wanted to, or those who are making up the agenda, wanted to say, okay, the use of tear gas, smoke, and pepper spray. Here's an update written on the People's Park website. Berkeley Mayor Jesse Arguin has canceled tonight's meeting, described below. Perhaps he's getting some spine, or he's just worried about national media attention. He tweeted, meeting canceled, policy stands, and shame on the sheriff for not guaranteeing mutual aid emergency support to Berkeley because he disagrees with our tear gas ban. Which, interesting that Sheriff's Department can sort of, I don't know, persuade the Berkeley City Council to throw a meeting. I don't know, don't they normally have Thursday meetings? I thought they had them on Tuesday, but maybe not. And here's more details on that. The Berkeley City Manager has requested to allow use of tear gas, smoke, and pepper spray while City Council goes on summer vacation. So the Berkeley City Council just called a special meeting for Thursday. Ah, yes, it was a special meeting. And the one agenda item is, and special meetings usually have one item, and there's no public, there's public comment on that item, but there's no oral communications period. Discussion and possible action regarding the temporary suspension of the June 9th policy, which I think I read before. And the People's Park website writers urge, call in and demand the council does not allow this violent city manager's wish. And apparently that meeting was canceled by the mayor after reflecting that might get a little out of hand after this is a mayor who was elected on a liberal progressive platform who has essentially betrayed his promises, according to, well, at least activist Carol Denny, who we've had reports from, according to my own assessment in terms of how he's treating homeless people in terms of allowing sweeps to continue through a sweepster city manager, which is kind of reminiscent of Santa Cruz. And here's a letter to the Berkeley City Council from Terry Compost, who I'm familiar with, actually. I think I know her personally. I haven't seen her in some time, and I don't know we have the most closest, the most intimate relationship, but she's an activist who I've interviewed in the past and has been a defender of People's Park and also a defender of homeless people's rights here in Santa Cruz. And anyway, what she writes: Dear Berkeley Mayor and City Council, it has come to my attention you could consider suspending the city's policy against the use of tear gas, smoke, and pepper spray for the duration of the City Council recess. The irresponsibility of putting an action like that in place during a time when the Council cannot act and respond to the situation is extremely irresponsible, if not criminal. I can only imagine you are considering it under pressure from your UC controllers to encourage them forward in their attack on People's Park and the people of Berkeley. The folly of the plan to try to build on People's Park is evident. It has been an immoral and blatantly classist and racist assault against one of the few refuges in the city in which all people are served. The response of the people should not be a surprise to you. Building on People's Park is a direct attack against a lot of people, some with nothing to lose. If UC or Berkeley truly wants housing, you will build it elsewhere. There is no scenario where putting a dorm on People's Park could possibly go smoothly. Now it's in your hands. Do you want your legacy to be a bloodbath for this folly? UC creates the problem of scarce housing by admitting unsustainable numbers of students and then pretends to solve the problem they created. Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. People's Park is a tar baby. The more you attack it, the more stuck you'll be covered in the tar of the evil of attacking the poor, the environment, and our hopes and dreams. Maybe with enough money, force, police, overtime, added expenditures, fences, and ill will, the university can cram in something, but it will never rest peacefully there. I suggest you don't commit to protracted war on the poor of your city. I think they already are, but that's another story. You cannot win. You will create more poverty and pain and devastation that will continue to ripple out. There is a righteous stand to take here. Gus Newport did the right thing when he's a former mayor from the 70s, when he refused to allow the City of Berkeley Police Department be the ground troops for UC's bad plan in 1979. The city has prohibited attacking peaceful protesters with chemical weapons for a reason. It is immoral. History will remember the decisions you make. Peace can be made, a dorm can be built on the parking lot of Ellsworth and Channing, but it will take legislators of conscience and intelligence to take leadership and bring our town back to peace. Please do not put swords into the wannabe overlord's arsenal to slaughter your city while you are on vacation. Please do the right thing. People's lives are at stake, and you must be responsible now. Thank you, Terry Compost, longtime Berkeley People's Park community organizer, gardener, educator. And apparently people are continuing to do events in People's Park. At least they're announcing them on the website. Thursday mornings, that will be this morning, earlier today, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., open-air temple gatherings with music and dance. I'm not sure that that happened with the loss of a... It says, we will grieve the loss of our beloved trees and draw strength in being together. We will sing, pray, meditate, dance, stretch. All are welcome. And I don't know if that actually happened or not, but who knows? Maybe I can find out. And then tomorrow, Fridays at 12:30, garden walks in People's Park continue. Meet at the Lemon Verbena in the southwest corner of the park. Not sure where that is, but if you go up there and check around, you might find it in case you happen to find yourself in Berkeley tomorrow. Here's a letter from Dieter Müller-Greven, a People's Park supporter from 1972. Dear friends of Berkeley People's Park, coming from Germany in 1972, hitchhiking across the USA to San Francisco, I heard about Berkeley People's Park, about the history from 1969, which was still fresh in 1972, and helped to defend the People's Park in May 1972. I still remember vividly the demonstration on Telegraph Avenue and helped tear down the fence at People's Park. Now I hear the UCB is still trying to occupy this historic place. Let me know if I can help in any way. May just tell you about the memories of Johnny's Soup Kitchen on Telegraph Avenue, or when we blocked the streets to Oakland Harbor with cars from junkyards to prevent the aircraft carrier from getting supplies so it couldn't go to Vietnam to bomb dikes to drown people, or about hiring a helicopter to coordinate the demonstration by FM radio from the air, or just from the all-night drum players in front of the Student Union building. Maybe there is a historic archive about this half-century-lasting fight for the park. I wish you all good luck. Keep this place in the hands of people and turn it into a historic monument with just grass and trees, benches and playgrounds, no concrete, no houses. Take care, Dieter Müller-Graven. So on July 27th, according to the website here, there was a concert and a series of speakers on the People's Park stage, which of course would be torn out by the building and construction that the UC was started to do, but then was stopped from doing yesterday. In case you haven't been told about that, that's what went down, according to the mainstream media that I heard, and even now corrupted KPFA mainstream media, because I think that's more or less what they are these days. But early on Wednesday morning, bulldozers came in, police came in, drove away people from the park, tried to put up a fence. People then later in the day tore it down, attacked the bulldozers, stopped them, put themselves in front of it nonviolently. Others attacked it with more force. And the university announced it was stopping construction for the moment. Now, I don't know if they're still stopping as of Thursday, but I'm trying to keep my ears peeled, so to speak. I guess you keep your eyes peeled, or keeping my ears alert. Anyway, here's something that happened on July 27th, where speakers came to the park to defend it, anticipating this kind of behavior by the UC, it looks like.
I want to welcome you on behalf of the People's Park Council, on behalf of sort of a network of folks who on the daily come through and contribute and work on the to try to help people understand why this park is so sacred.
And this is Andrea Pritchard of Copwatch, who's been a longtime activist. I've known her for about 25 years now. I met her at a demonstration that we held in Santa Cruz in 1990 called the Homeless People's Congress in our park, in San Lorenzo Park, which in a way it's modern-day People's Park, at least the Benchlands is, in the sense that it's more of a refuge for people who have no place to go, and it's a sort of a place where the city is cramming people in rather than letting them reasonably spread out to different places. But it's trying to maintain its massive control and concentration of homeless folks, which is a failed strategy, has been for a long time here in Santa Cruz. Anyway, here's Andrea talking about, well, you'll hear what she's talking about.
And so important. I also want to offer us the opportunity to counter a narrative, a negative narrative that has been put forward by the university and by the city. They tell us that People's Park is not a park, it's just a place where, oh, well, all it's just crazy people and drug addicts. That's the only people who are here. And we need to remember that People's Park is not to be conquered. That's the problem that the university has with this land. That for 53 years they've been trying to conquer the counterculture, conquer the revolutionaries, conquer the narrative of justice and equality. They've been trying to conquer that. So they tell us all they lift up. Last week, Fox News recycled a story from 2018 about a mentally ill person who tried to give drugs to a two-year-old. They spun that story, and 4 years later, they're still spinning it, trying to make people hate People's Park. But those of us who come here, we know a different truth. We know that this is the place. When you were hungry, when you needed clothes, when you fell through that social safety net, when we fell through the cracks, People's Park was here to catch us. People's Park was here to catch us. And so imagine the cruelty of a city, of a university that would take even the little bit that we have, that they would try to take that away from us. The university speaks the language of genocide. They say that we will take even the little bit away, that we will deprive the poor of even that little modicum of dignity. And we're here to say no. So, we believe in a better day for the poor people. We believe in a better day for the people of Berkeley, a more humane and forthright way of living together. And so, what we're here to say is that in order to avoid the conflict, if the university and the city want peace in our streets, peace in this park, that we offer this, that we say, let the Confederated villages of the Lishan Nation have this land back. Let them have this land back. And if the indigenous people of this area decide that they want to build apartments, let it be so. If they decide that they want beautiful open land that nurtures the community, let it be so. So I would like to invite John Holloway to come to the stage. This afternoon, Corina Gould, who is a spokesperson for the Confederated Villages of the Lishan Nation, she wrote today solidarity with the idea that, yes, they would take this land and they would put it to use to help right the wrongs of the past and to help lift up the Ohlone people of this area. So I want to invite John. John Holloway works with the Berkeley Drop-In Center. And John, you can go ahead and talk about your connection, and maybe you can share Ms. Gould's words.
Everybody, and thank you, Andrea. Okay, that's cool. Thank you. Yeah, my name is John Holloway, but I go by John H. because I'm in recovery. Recently, July 24th, I celebrated 27 years clean and sober.
Yeah.
Right. So, back in the day, I used to come to this park. I used to shoot hoops over there back in the day. This stage is hella cool because I've seen all kind of people here, like Santana and people of that, of that nature here at the park way back in the 70s. I'm like 70 years old. So I've been here and I got high here. I'm not going to lie. I got drunk here and all that stuff, but my life is cool and better now, so I'm going to read this, okay? So, greetings, relatives. On behalf of the Confederate Villages of the Lishan Nation, I have asked for this statement to be read tonight, and the tribal members of the leader are all at the ceremony and cannot be with you. Confederate Villages of the Lishan Nation have made this land, currently called Berkeley, our home of thousands of years before colonization. Before the thought of private land ownership was a concept in this land was taken care of by our ancestors. There was an abundance here. Imagine a few hundred years ago, there was no concept fresh water out of the Strawberry Creek.
That's right.
Our way of life was distributed because people came to this land with the thought of lording over the land. Rather than cause great harm to this land, waters, animals, plants, and people. Greed, making money, and covering everything in concrete and asphalt takes away the scarredness of the land of people who are living in confines and urban areas. The ability to have a small group of humans displaced other in the time of worldwide pandemic with the ever increasing cost of living, and goddamn, that is the truth. Ever going up rent, everything. And ever increasing cost of living, food shortages on the brink, a continuous desensitized ability to look at homelessness that goes against everything that we've been traditionally taught about being human beings. Confederate Villages of the Lashon Nation stands to defend People's Park, to dream and create a new way of life, one in which we remember that our responsibilities are to the earth, water, and air, and most of all, to each other. Thank you very much. My name is John H. Thank you.
One of the ways that folks are fighting to preserve this sacred land is in the courts. And I'd like to invite Joe and Harvey, who are with the People's Park Historic District. There's an important court date coming up on Thursday, and we need folks to know about it and to be tuned in. And let's go ahead and give a big hand for Joe Leisner.
And before we hear Joe, let's take a little musical break for a change of pace.
My mother was exotic. She was like a gypsy queen. I'd pretend she wasn't mine when I was 15. Her voice was loud. She wore men's shoes. She braided up her hair. Men would stop and stare. Her clothes were few and never new. She was always out of style. She was always nagging me. She'd treat me like a child. Sometimes I wished I had a mother like the rest. Sometimes she was so lovely that it took away my breath.
Most of the time my mum's okay, don't like it when she shouts and swears. She never listens to what I say, but tells me that she really cares. Calls me dear when Kevin's here, she's nasty when he's gone away. Thinks she's jealous cause I'm young and free and she's at work all day. Thinks I'm still her baby girl, she wants to run my life. Worries when I'm out at night, her temper's nearly bad as mine. Gran says Mum was just like me when she was in her teens. So why can't Mum leave me alone? She's always, always nagging me.
Where are you going? When will you be back? You're surely not going out looking like that. Dressed in black from head to toe, talks for hours on the phone. Why won't you tell me where you go? Wish for once you'd stay at home. Looks at me so blank and cold, a look that cuts me to the heart. Where's the child, the friend I had, the daughter like the morning star? I know you go and sit in pubs, although you tell me that you don't. I know you have a lacy bra that opens down the front. I know you hang out with a gang, you don't know all I know. You never tell me anything, you just dress up and go.
Why should I tell you? I'll go where I want. I'll do what I want and say what I want. When I have a kid, I'll let her do her homework when she wants to do it. Tell her how it was for me and how my mother put me through it. I won't wait till her dad comes home to tell him all she's said and done. I hope that I won't have to work so hard and worry like my mom.
Shakes me off when I try to touch her, throws herself at all the boys. Just can't think with her music blaring, she can't live without that noise. I'm in the kitchen making dinner, washing dishes in the dirt. Mom, have you seen my satin blouse and fixed the zipper on my skirt? I wish that I had looked so pretty, wish that I had had your style. Love it when you wear my clothes, I wish that we could talk a while. She rarely tells me where she goes, she never tells me what she does. With her friends she laughs and smiles, she's not like that with us.
I can take care of myself, you know, I'm not a baby, now leave me alone. My mum goes out to work all day. When she comes home, I make her tea. I can cook and sew and clean. None of my mates do that but me. Mum goes all coy about the boys, thinks I do more than I do. She never tells me what she does, but she's too old for that, I know. Wish that I was 18, wish that I lived on my own. When she gets that suffering look, I try to think of what I've done. Wants to hold me, wants to keep me, wants me in by 10:30. Every time I stand my ground, the same old chorus starts again.
Where are you going? When will you be back?
Where are you going? When will you be back? Where are you going? When will you be back? Where are you going? When will you be back? Sometimes I'm a stranger in my own skin.
I'm losing power, giving in.
She taught me to shop and to manage the house.
She taught me how to put makeup on and frowns when I wear my low-cut blouse.
My mom's there. When I need her, she's there.
Everyone needs something secret, something they don't have to share.
Don't make jokes in front of my mates, you look so silly when you do.
You won't come and I won't follow, don't know how to get through to you.
Most of the time my mom is right, but I'm not gonna tell her so.
You cope with the world much better than I did, you know things I'll never know.
Grant says you were just like me, and I say you're the same as her.
Goodbye baby, goodbye girl, welcome woman to the world.
Why do you make me feel so guilty, everything I say and do?
Those are the words of my old song, love, you're just singing a different tune.
La 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 la.
To see everybody out. What a beautiful day. What a beautiful park. Thank you, John, for reading that message.
You're welcome.
From the First People. So, nothing much has happened. We have prevailed. We have slapped down the UC lawyers, I think 3 times now. It started with the first decision on the 1st of July, and that it was reiterated on the 8th of July, that it said they were prohibited from cutting any trees, demolishing any property, or engaging in any landscape altering activities. But that didn't stop them. They kept dumping logs and dumping chips to try and make sure nobody would really have any use. And as my friend Rosie pointed out, the chips prevent the grass from getting green when it starts to rain. They have no connection to the earth. And there's a good chance we're going to stop them. We are seeing now that as soon as we win something, they're back in court. The last time it happened, the judge said, okay, you guys want to put up a fence, but I'm really not going to go for that. Which was great, because he has not been that nice to us in the past. But he said, no, no permission for the fence. I'll see you in 2 weeks, which will be Friday when the trial happens. UC was back in court. That was on a Friday. Back in court, less than 24 hours on Saturday morning with some bogus, you know, ill-conceived, hollow legal arguments that it's no secret that they hold no water, and legal people have said they're pretty bogus. But that's what they're doing. That's the way they play. They try and bleed you dry. Our lawyers are good. That's why we've won all these appeals. But they cost a lot of money. So we're passing around, I hope, a QR code for our legal fund. Put in whatever you can. It'll help. And on Friday, there's a good chance that it'll be a very quick decision. The tentative briefs are in, and he's read them, Mr. Roche, the Honorable Frank Roche. And it may happen fast. But the reason we need your money is because we may have to appeal that decision on Friday. And we will, because we're doing so well in the appeals court. And hopefully Judge Roche has seen that we're doing well, that the three-judge panel of the appeals court has got some historical and cultural and political sense, and that our appeal stands a chance. Woo! So that's what we're going for, and we're going to beat them. You know, for some reason, Chancellor Crist has made this her line in the sand. Many, many months ago, we heard from people high up in the previous positions in the government of Berkeley that Carol Crist used to sit at meetings. Wait a second. When are we going to get to the park? Carol, put your hand down. We're not talking about the park. But the park, we got to get the park back. She is hell-bent on destroying this park. And if she wasn't, she might see the fact that there are so many better locations. They're not going to get this park. Even if they win, they're not going to get it this summer.
That's right.
We're going to have the students back, and they're going to see how beautiful the potential of this park is. And we'll have more people out here. And we'll build up our ranks, and we'll fight them good. And maybe Miss Crist will be able to see that less than two blocks away from here is a perfectly good site to build housing on. It's the size of the park. It's the size they want to build on. It's been slated for demolition in 2016. It's unsafe and it's underused. It's the Ellsworth Channing parking structure. Tennis on the roof. You can still have tennis on the roof of the student housing. All right. Thanks a lot for listening. Heads up on Friday. We're having an event here starting on Friday in case they do come in with the fence crew. A four-day event, a kind of ravey thing, and bring whatever you need to be comfortable for a while.
So hopefully to get a little more updated, here's the KPFA Morning News, which, again, as I said, I'm rather skeptical of KPFA News. They kind of shoveled it in after what I call establishment propaganda around Taiwan and Pelosi's visit. But here's what they did talk about, and let's see if we can get a little more out from this.
Testers at the site that has been basically autonomous for more than half a century, now under threat of being turned into 1,100 housing units by the University of California, Berkeley, which owns it. We will speak to two reporters who were out yesterday covering all the developments, which included protesters blocking construction equipment until UC Berkeley withdrew and tearing down fences that its crews had used to wall off the site. That's coming up next after the news.
I'm Max Frank.
Workers moved on Berkeley's People's Park in the early morning hours yesterday. UC Berkeley owns the land. It has a city-approved plan to turn it into housing for students and the formerly homeless. As the cops slowly evicted the last people living in the parks, protesters started showing up, blocked heavy construction equipment, eventually tore down fencing around the site, and by late yesterday appear to have won for now. UC announced in a press release that it is halting construction activity out of safety concerns. The park is not unscarred. Construction workers cut down almost every tree on the site, most of which were planted in concert with the first Battle of People's Park when it was set up by principally student activists more than half a decade ago. We're going to walk through what's going on. We'll start with Alistair Boone, editor-in-chief of Street Spirit.
He means half a century ago, not half a decade ago. It was in 69 that People's Park was created.
Which is published by Youth Spirit Artworks. Good morning. I want to start with kind of the role that the park has been playing in recent years. I haven't been over there for quite some time, but it seems like the number of people living in the park has really swelled. How would you describe its role in the community?
Yeah, you know, People's Park for a long time wasn't a place where homeless folks would sleep, but it has been primarily, you know, basically people's home for many years, and that a bunch of unhoused people in Berkeley who don't really have other places to go and just exist during the day would go every day. You know, there was a cohesive community of people who would spend time with each other, kind of rely on being able to show up and be there throughout the day. And then for a long time, UC Police would require those folks to leave in the night. During COVID, UC Police stopped enforcing that ban on overnight sleeping. And so about 60 people over the last couple of years were, they set up an encampment at the park and were living there full time. And that was kind of a shift, but I would say just in general, the park has just in recent years continued to be what it's always been, which is a place where community members who don't have another place to go can exist freely, where everyone gets a voice and where people feel like they can be themselves and can exist without penalty.
Except, as Alistair mentioned, during the night, for, 48 of those 50 years, since 1969, I've not got my figures quite right here, but you couldn't be in the park at night. The police took it upon themselves to harass, fine, ticket, jail, and otherwise punish people who are in the park at night in a way that in Santa Cruz was similarly the case until the police eventually began driving people into parks at night to get them off the streets away from the downtown area. Because they were it was such a failed situation regarding housing, even shelter, and an economy that essentially no longer serves, if it ever did, the majority of the community.
It has a free box for sorting through donations. It's a place that Food Not Bombs serves meals. It's a place where activists hold meetings, community concerts get staged without permits.
Yeah.
It's got basketball courts that are well used by neighbors. It's not just an autonomous space. It's like a space where people from a lot of different walks of life come into the same place.
Totally. Yeah, and a place where people can have conversations, political conversations, conversations about, you know, things that they might need in their lives, where people can kind of show up and meet each other's needs. All the time I've spent there has felt really engaged. You know, People's Park has always been a place where you go to engage and to speak to each other and to kind of participate actively in building community. It's not it's not a park. I mean, it can be, you know, it can be a place where you just go and read a book, but the real sort of soul of People's Park is in all these different community groups who come to see each other, to talk to each other, to play and listen to music, to dance. Yeah, it's, you know, that's kind of the heart and soul of the place.
I want to bring into the conversation Supriya Yellabelli, who reports on housing and homelessness for Berkeley Side. Talk to us about UC Berkeley's plans for the site. What do they want to build there? And when did they get it into their head that this was the right time to do it?
Yeah, this plan has been in the works for really decades now. I think it started ramping up a lot more when it got approved a couple of years ago. But the plan is to build primarily student housing that would have space for about 1,100 students, and also included in the plan is a partnership which would establish around 100 units, and that would be mixed affordable units, and it would also include housing for some formerly unhoused people. And, you know, in the recent years with the pandemic and the, you know, housing crisis that has really ramped up along with that, and people have seen more people sleeping on the streets. Some people claim that the university kind of used that as a reason to point to the park as a place where, you know, drug use was happening and there was homelessness, and kind of conflate some of those issues. But in the meantime, you know, the UC also, UC Berkeley specifically says that it's the university in the system that provides the fewest beds for its students, and that regardless of what happened during the pandemic, now is the time for them to be establishing the student housing.
And just a quick comment, the KPFA News choice of these two non-homeless individuals who have sort of more elite positions. Alistair Boone is the editor of Street Spirit newspaper. Berkeley Side is a relatively conservative community publication that would probably like nothing better than to see People's Park and homeless people throughout Santa Cruz dispersed to the winds. There's no interviews with people in the park, at least not as of yet. You have heard in some of my earlier netcast interviews from some of the folks in the park from months ago or weeks ago. We've got what we've got here today. So let's take another one of them musical breaks, and we'll be back. By the way, that the music that we heard just now or a few minutes ago was a Peggy Seeger song called Different Tunes, and it was from Peggy Seeger's album Period Piece, Women's Songs for Men and Women. So here's another one from Peggy Seeger called Reclaim the Night.
Though Eve was made from Adam's rib, 9 months he lay within her crib. How can a man of woman born thereafter use her sex with scorn? For though we bear the human race, to us is given but second place, and some men place us lower still by using us against our will. If we choose to walk alone, for us there is no safety zone. If we're attacked, we bear the blame. They say that we began the game. And though you prove your injury, the judge may set the rapist free. Therefore, the victim is to blame. Call it nature, but rape's the name. Reclaim the night and win the day. We want the right that should be our own, a freedom women have seldom known. The right to live, the right to walk alone without fear.
Our husband has his lawful rights, can take his wife whene'er he likes. Though courts uphold time after time that rape in marriage is a crime, the choice is hers and hers alone. Submit or lose your kids and home. When love becomes a legal claim, call it duty, but rape's the name. And if a man should rape a child, is it because his spirit's wild? Our system gives the prize to all who trample on the weak and small. When fathers rape, they surely must go. Try to forget, don't ask us to forgive them. They know what they do. Reclaim the night and win the day. We want the right that should be our own. A freedom women have seldom known. The right to live, the right to walk alone without fear. When exploitation is the norm, rape is found in many forms. Lower wages, meaner tasks, poorer schooling, second class. We serve our own, and like the men, we serve employers. It follows then that bodies rape is nothing new, but just a servant's final due. We've raised our voices in the past, and this time will not be the last. Our body's gift is ours to give, not payment for the right to live. Since we reject the status quo, we claim the right to answer no. If without consent he stake a claim, call it rape, for rape's the name.
And again, that was Reclaim the Night from Period Piece by Peggy Seeger. And though it's a little grudging on my part, here's a bit more of the Berkeley side speaker. Sounds like justification of the university's position, but here it is.
Talk to me about the protests that turned construction crews around yesterday. Who is turning up for them? Who's participating?
Was primarily young people. And just for context right now, UC Berkeley is in its summer session. So the amount of people that are usually here are not here, but given that there were still primarily UC Berkeley students, there were some graduate students, as well as People's Park activists who have been in the area and been fighting for this project throughout. The UC operation itself began at around midnight on Wednesday, and this continued throughout the day. It was a pretty long 24 hours, and around Wednesday afternoon, things kind of came to a head, and protesters tore down the fences. They walked in, and the UC had been saying, we're prioritizing safety in this. So they eventually ended up withdrawing construction crews and law enforcement, and they had called in aid from other UC campuses, the Cal State University, as well as the California Highway Patrol. So by around 2 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, I'd say, all law enforcement had left the area and people had returned to occupy the park.
So I want to move from kind of the political question of what ultimately happens to the land to the question of the impact of these last 24 hours of maneuvers. There were people living in the park who didn't have anywhere else to live. What have UC and the city been doing for them when they try to evict them?
Yeah, it happened in two parts, really. So the chancellor for UC Berkeley had made a promise that by the time they do construction on the park, they're going to have everyone housed. And one of the main ways they did that was by partnering with the city of Berkeley to buy the roadway in, which had previously been used for Project Roomkey during the pandemic to house folks who were previously living in the West Berkeley encampments that were also closed. So there were around 50 spots for folks from People's Park at the roadway in, and those spots were filled. Yesterday or Wednesday morning, there were still around two or three people at the park who didn't have somewhere to go. And Peter Radu, who works with the city's homeless response team, was there. And they moved one person to the Grayson shelter, which is set to close in September. And I believe they were still working on outreach with the other two people. At this time, it's unconfirmed where they're going to go.
Isn't that... If the Roadway Inn was previously a Project Roomkey hotel, doesn't that mean they were pushing other unhoused people out of it to make room for unhoused people from People's Park? I mean, isn't that a bit of a shell game?
Yeah, that's definitely what it looked like to a lot of people. It just seemed like rotation. Folks at People's Park called that out yesterday specifically and said it was likely just returning people to cycles of poverty. The city, as well as the project managers, have worked with the folks who are at the Roadway Inn to set them up with permanent housing. And I think the main thing they were trying to accomplish as well is to just get people into the system, because a lot of folks had been living on the streets for years, if not decades, and hadn't, you know, gone through any of the county channels to be set up with housing. So the Roadway Inn with Project Roomkey was kind of like a hub to get people into that system. I believe a lot of people were matched with housing, but as we've seen when this happens, when encampments are closed, a lot of people also end up back on the streets, or they just end up disconnected from their communities and end up somewhere else. So that's certainly part of it, too.
All right. We're going to leave it there for now. We'll try to keep on top of new developments. Right now, UC Berkeley hasn't made any announcements about when it might try to resume construction activity on the site of People's Park. Supriya Yelamelli, Alistair Boone, thank you both of you for speaking to us this morning.
So bouncing now from Berkeley to the Benchlands, here's some clips or briefs from a visit I did on, I think it was, could have been Sunday, trying to see what was going on because of the removal of tents on Thursday that happened. That you may have heard some of the discussion in the last two shows. Anyway, I meandered in, and here's what I found, starting first at the duck pond and then wandering down among folks in the actual Benchlands area. The duck pond, for those who don't know, is in the upper park, which has been ruled strictly forbidden for homeless people to camp in, even though they're crammed cheek by jowl like sardines into the Benchlands. And if they happen outside it, let's say under the bridges, they get essentially mowed down, directed to leave, and their property taken if they don't do so expeditiously. So anyway, here's some of the interviews. It's about 3:10, and I'm talking on July 31st with
Stephen Wheelock.
And Stephen, you're in a happy mood. You've got your transiting from Watsonville here to
since May.
And you've said first you hated it, then you loved it, and now you're visiting anyway.
Well, I'm here now permanently.
Oh, really? Are you on in the Benchlands or
no? My social worker is trying to get me into permanent housing, which will cost a third of my income, which is fine. I have no problem with that. I'd be more than happy to spend a third of my income on housing.
And so where are you now? You're in Watsonville?
No. I'm homeless.
I'm not going to tell anybody. But now everybody knows. So are you teaching him guitar, or is he teaching you guitar?
Vice versa.
Oh, that makes sense, I guess, if you understand what you're talking about.
I've been playing it since 1965.
Oh, wow.
And he's been playing it, I don't know how long. He just knows more than I know.
Maybe you're teaching each other.
Something like that.
Well, I'm here for this meeting. I guess these guys are showing up to talk about, I don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to talk with them and see what they say. And it, yeah, at the duck pond, actually. I guess it's a big duck pond, but, you know, except I don't see many ducks. I guess they all gone south for the summer. Weird. Anything you want to add, Steve?
No, not especially. Except I believe that if I'm homeless this winter, I am going to die.
Well, I sure hope not, but...
Hey, you're older than I am. How old are you? Okay, I'm 69. We're in the same age bracket.
You have a weathered face. May you been out in the sunshine there. I will be checking in to either check to see whether you're still around or not, you know. It's a quiet day here at the duck pond, and Steve pulls out a...
Chris, she got me this for free.
That's a smartphone, looks like.
Yeah, I know. It's... The battery's dead, I gotta charge up. So she can always contact me.
Really?
If something comes up, a place to live, I've got money in the bank, so I just gotta call her up, or she can call me up.
How does it feel again being outside? Is it harder than it was?
Yeah. Every joint in my body hurts. I have trouble walking. My hips hurt. Everything hurts. I'm not used to it.
And yet you seem more cheerful generally.
No, I'm not.
You cover it nicely, Steve.
What is it, Daddy? That's right.
And again, we... Go ahead.
I can only walk about 100 yards, and I have to sit down and wait for the pain to subside. It was never like that before. But once I'm homeless again, all I feel is pain.
Because you have to do so much walking, right?
Well, perhaps. When I was living in Watsonville, I had a bicycle. So I rode a bicycle everywhere. No big deal. It's easy.
How long ago did you leave Watsonville?
Everybody had to leave the motel. It was because of the coronavirus. Everybody there was from Santa Cruz. We all had to leave on May 21st.
How many people got evicted?
I don't know. I'd say probably 70.
Was there much community in the hotel, or was it pretty much...
Just isolate. But, you know, there's a smoking area outside where everybody would hang out and play music and the guitars and whatever, hang out.
Did any of that community linger after people...
Everybody had to be out of there on May 21st.
And they didn't come together?
No, I see them around town. Right. Some of them, yeah. I know them. But, and they're on the same boat. They're all trying to get housing.
How many of them would you say that you know have actually gotten housing? Many people or not?
I don't think anybody has.
Really?
This one woman I know, her name's Linda. She's like your age. She's like 72. I am more concerned about her than anybody. She's like 72 years old. She should go first, you know, as far as housing goes. I could not foresee her being homeless. You know, it's just, it wouldn't work. I see her every day at the library. You probably know her. If you saw her, you probably know her. You know her.
Not a few.
Well, by sight, but I forget who they are, you know.
Yeah, right, I understand that.
Well, Steve, thank you. I'm going to join this meeting. I think it's an open meeting if you're interested. It's about, I don't know what it's about. I think it's probably about the benchlands and homeless people outside and stuff like that.
Well, it's good. Actually, it's still summer.
And not too hot, thank goodness. Or not too cold. And again, we've been talking with?
Me.
Thank you, monsieur.
All right, good to see you, brother.
All right, man. So next I headed for a couple of guys who were sitting talking, waiting for a fellow who had organized a meeting in the Benchlands. I wasn't sure what it was about. But since I was concerned with possible evictions from the Benchlands, that was the original suspicion I had. It turned out to be wrong. It was about cleaning up the Benchlands in terms of trash pickups, which apparently had been stopped at that point or stalled or were somehow disrupted. Anyway, here's that interview.
Homeless United Friendship and Freedom, I think, is Huff.
Correct.
Is what Robert does. And he comes down here and keeps people keyed into what's happening. And
this is a guy who is apparently one of my boosters. His name is Timothy. He recognized me. I didn't quite recognize him, but that often happens. Some folks have got a stronger clarity of memory than I do. And anyway, here's the conversation.
Has a podcast.
And
he's been doing that for a long time. And he's kind of notable for that. So that's how I know Robert. And this is Mark's. Mark scheduled this because he's lived down here for way longer than I have. I haven't been down here very long. But he knows a lot of people down here. And he's just tired of the trash and the mess.
For sure.
And he wants to come up with some way that it's not so angry between the city and the police and the people, or at least just talk about trying to come up with some solution. One thing I've noticed about Mark is he's always trying to clean stuff up. He's always trying to make a difference with that, but you know, he's kind of overwhelmed. He doesn't know what to do. So when he came up with wanting to just come up with a meeting, I said, sure. You know, I'm a little hands-off. And
I've forgotten your name, by the way.
Timothy.
Sorry, Timothy.
Yeah, no worries. That's fine. Your name's a little easier to remember because, you know, you're Robert of Huff.
Huffing and puffing, yes.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah,
I heard from Keith McHenry, the food guy.
Keith is the Food Not Bombs guy. Oh, you know Food Not Bombs.
I just heard of somebody mentioning him.
Keith is
Food
a great person to talk to.
What? I heard that the trash is not being picked up here, hasn't been for the last few days. That's when I spoke to him yesterday.
Yeah,
has there been a change in how they're picking up trash, the city? Does anybody know?
Honestly, I don't know. I kind of keep to myself, but when I love taking walks at night and just seeing things, but recently I've noticed it's gotten really crazy, like big trash piles.
And actually, at the Huff meeting today, August 4th, one of the residents, Troy, came forward to say that he had heard that apparently the regular trash disposal guy had for some reason quit or been unable to work, and that was the reason the trash had been piling up, but that now it was being taken care of by police or some other city agency. I'm not entirely clear on that. So there was some concern that this was a sort of a harbinger of a complete eviction from the Benchland, since that rumor had been spreading. And at least not so at the moment.
Really? About near the trash cans, or are you talking about more in the camp?
There's like a between the tents where a vehicle usually drives through. Now there's just like mountains of trash, and it's disgusting.
Well, that's what I've heard, is that there's, as of last Monday, they stopped picking up trash.
That's what's going on.
But I haven't heard an official notice or anything. That's just what some people have observed. And they were removing tents near the dumpsters.
Mark is coming back at some point.
We can call him. I tried texting him.
Unfortunately, I have to be somewhere at 4. Yeah. I just saw this about 30 minutes ago, so I wanted to come over. And,
I think I sent it to David, who sent it to you.
Let's try calling. Let's see if he picks up.
What's your name? I'm Robert.
Aiden.
Yes. How do you do, Aiden?
Aiden was telling me about how he I forget what you're volunteering with, but your experience working with the Seattle homeless.
I'm visiting family here. I live in Seattle, and there's a lot of similar stuff there.
Are they kicking people out of their tents up there a lot?
Yeah, there's not such a large camp, but there are a lot of smaller ones all over the city, and they are, you know, every week there's, you know, so sometimes it feels like Monday through Friday they have one or two camps they're making move. And the housing and shelter especially have been expanding slowly, which is part of what allows them to keep doing this legally, because the Ninth Circuit decision, Martin versus Boise, does mandate that Western states have to at least offer shelter beds when they're making people move.
Appear to.
Yes. The law isn't always followed, and there's been a lot of talk about, can we get the ACLU to bring a suit, or is there somebody who's willing to...
mind if I ask you a little more about yourself, Tim?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't want to interrupt your... You go right ahead.
I'm trying to be concise. But yeah, there's a lot of people being made to move all the time.
Want to move closer?
And of course, even when there is shelter offered, and the shelter is not necessarily some adequate people willing to use for any number of reasons. The trying to force somebody who needs housing to go to a shelter is wrong.
Tyler, do you want one?
It says people have legitimate reasons for that. For the for the same reason it's wrong to force somebody who needs an abortion to go to an adoption agency. It doesn't solve their problem. And you have a lot of print chats here.
I've lived in San Diego for a couple of years now.
So, how long have you been around here, Eden?
I'm just in town yesterday, today, and the day before.
So you're not outside yourself when you're living up there?
No. I'm lucky that I can live with my parents and that they don't charge a lot of rent. And also I'm lucky that they could afford to buy a house in Seattle 25 years ago when it was cheaper.
How long have you been living in the park? In Santa Cruz, I guess.
Why are you interested in my first one?
I wish...
Because there are not that many...
All the people who are...
...ready to get up and go to a meeting about, you know, changing things, making things better, making things different. So when there is
That's
okay. I lost the thread, too.
I wish we all took more time to reflect on how lucky we are. Use that to stand up for those who are not in various ways.
Unfortunately, a lot of the conversation became crosstalk. Plus, one of the guys I was talking to had a strange verbal tic, and he kept. It's the strangest thing actually I've heard in some time. He kept squeaking. It literally sounded like a small dog squeaking. And it was a verbal tic. It was something, I think, beyond his control. And it also, there was cross conversation. So we were going to actually move into another conversation where I think you can actually hear what the people are saying. This is down on the Benchlands. We move from the Benchlands to from the duck pond to the Benchlands, because apparently Mark's never showed up. The guy doing the supposedly arranging the meeting we were all going to go to. Okay, well it's about 20 to 4 on July 31st. I'm in the Duck Island stage area and talking with an anonymous. Would you say you're a resident? Would that be fair?
Sure, resident.
And I mentioned to you that, you know, I was asking about any tents being taken, and you mentioned that there was one tent taken near the dumpsters, or maybe more than one, and you also mentioned there was something, I noticed that happened on Thursday, because they told us about it. We came down, talked to the guy whose tent was removed, who didn't want to be named, and so I'm not naming him on this recording. But on Monday, you said something happened as well.
Right, Monday, the guy with the bulldozer came down with a couple of officers in black and white, and they're speaking, and one of the guy that was driving the bulldozer says, "So what are we going to do here?" And because he's like, "This isn't going to work." And then they waited, and a few more employees came, and then he's like, "So what's the plan?" And he's like, "Everything has to go," or he said something like, "We have to take it all."
Now, was this a bulldozer guy who said this, or was it the cop? Or
this was the officer standing next to one of the city workers and the guy driving the bulldozer.
It's a group of about how many people, would you estimate?
About 5-6 people.
Recognize the officer?
Absolutely. These guys have been coming around harassing us for the past couple months.
Know his name?
No, but it was the officer when I was under the bridge with the about 20 or 25 other people 2 weeks ago. they came in, kicked us out of our... They warned us about a week prior, said that they're kicking everyone out from under the bridge. And then about a week later, they came with a bulldozer and about 20 workers. And everyone was forced to leave and forced to hurry up and get all their stuff out within you know, hours. And I actually went to jail that day because I was the last person to leave. And I wasn't the one to, I didn't leave when they told me, they gave me a time limit and said you have to leave by then. If not, we're taking you to jail. And
what did they charge you with? Or did they?
They tried to charge me with trespassing and something that I was missing. I missed court for 5 months ago. Hmm.
And you were released after how long?
My first court date after 4 days in jail.
So this was about a couple of weeks ago when they bulldozed under the bridge, under the Water Street Bridge.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. So ever since then, it's been like a downhill because I've been forced to find a new spot. I've been forced to retrieve all the items that was taken, including my transportation, my bicycle, and also just all the other problems that comes with having to get kicked out of your house.
Did they store your property or give you a receipt for any of your property?
They forced one of the people that were representing the homeless, like one of the patients' rights advocate, they forced one of them to take my belongings. Instead of taking it to the Santa Cruz Police Department, they forced just an innocent bystander to be responsible for my belongings.
Was this Abby? Was she around? Or?
Abby was around, yeah.
Was she the person who took your stuff? Or?
The people she was with.
How did that work out?
That was good. They saved all my materialistic stuff, but they weren't able to get the bike, and someone stole my bicycle. And the tent that was standing there, the new tent that I bought, I'm sure they bulldozed that and bulldozed a few other materialistic shit that was materialistic, all my other materialistic things that were outside of the tent. And, you know, the way they did it was just uncalled for, you know, and they did it out of anger despite the fact that I was taking too long, you know. And they could have helped. They should have more reliable services down here. This is the second time this has been here. Like 7 years ago, this tent city was here when I was here. And after that, it was at Ross. And now it's back here again. And I think that if they're going to kick us out, they need to have another designated location before kicking us out. You know.
You and I tend to agree on that. Here's a petition I'm circulating to get people to sign up and want to challenge this, although I'm not quite sure how it could be challenged. You might want to, have you got a phone contact number that I can take off net here?
Yeah, I have a contact number, yeah.
Let me stop the recording. And you've tried to relocate after this when you got out of jail. Tell me about that.
Not really working because everyone's supposed to be 6 feet apart anyways. And there's some tents that are pretty much touching. And there's some tents that aren't 6 feet. And I like my space. And I, you know, like my privacy. But we're all packed in here like sardines. And this is probably like less than 60% of the homeless community. There's still other homeless people out there that need a designated location that they're comfortable with, or they just need, you know, anything other than running around town trying to find a place to sleep and going to jail for trespassing.
What's your sense of whether this threat by the, that you overheard, this was, you overheard this from this cop or somebody else?
Yeah.
You overheard it directly?
It's a cat and mouse game. It's like playing chicken. You know, they're forcing our hand, and we tuck our tails against the authority, and they have the weapons, and they have, you know, rules that they go by. So if we don't listen to their rules, they can fuck with us, you know?
Or they make up the rules as they go.
Yeah.
That's what I've...
They use the authority to their advantage to make homeless people go somewhere where, you know, where they're not too sure of. It's just because it's too close to the city. And then when you have people coming off the freeway, coming to Santa Cruz to go to the boardwalk and shit, they see this. Or they're walking by from the hotels and they see this and they tell their friends and their family not to go around, because if you look on the Yelp.com about the San Lorenzo Park, people are being disrespectful, talking about how dirty this one guy, you know, just stereotypical shit about homeless people. And I think that it's frowned upon by us.
How long have you...
Homelessness in Santa Cruz and California is real. Homelessness in California is really real.
Yeah.
Every other city you go to, there's thousands of homeless people.
How long have you been in the Benchlands yourself this time?
I've been homeless 12 years.
And have you been mostly in the Benchlands for the last 2 years, or...?
I've been mostly at the campgrounds, wherever the campground is.
And in the Benchlands campground, has it changed much in the last 2 years?
It's changed, but I don't know if it's for the, like, can't confirm or deny whether it's the better or the good, you know? That's a good change or bad change.
I mean, was there a reason you moved under the bridge rather than, let's say, stayed in the main Benchlands campground? Was it because it was becoming too crowded?
So I can have
more space?
More space and privacy, yeah. And have a, you know, yeah, exactly.
And... What was your situation after you were forced out from under the bridge, forced into jail, and then did you have to suffer any penalties being in jail, or just the penalty of losing all your stuff, being taken to jail, held there?
I'm having a court date, and if I miss my court date, I go back to jail.
And what are they charging you with? Trespass, you were saying, I think.
Yeah. But I'm looking at felonies, which ain't cool, you know. I wasn't doing good, but I was doing better than now. You know? Now I got a panhandle just to get some food. It ain't right. Doesn't make sense.
What's the sense you have about when you moved into this, in your latest spot here, how does it compare with the places you were at under the bridge and then previously in the Benchlands? Is it, I think you were saying generally it's gotten worse than 2 years ago, but
It's changed in a good way and it's changed in a bad way.
What are the good ways and what are the bad ways?
I'm not too sure. That's just my own opinion, you know.
Okay. Do you have a spot that is suitable in the Benchlands in the sense that you would rather stay here than get moved to God knows where else? Or what's your feeling? I know you mentioned when we sat down that... They shouldn't be trying to move people out unless they have decent places for people to go. Do I understand that properly?
I think they should extend it from this bridge all the way down to the next bridge. They can extend it and you know, flatten out some of that shit down there. And then they can extend it from this bridge all the way down to that bridge too. It's already flat anyway. They can just stretch it out a little bit more and open the space. They can open this up here. Down to the next, down to that bridge, and then a little more down this way.
From Soquel to water, and then also maybe over to the Broadway Bridge.
Right, and then have more than one water faucet for hundreds of people to use. You know, and more than 5 bathrooms for hundreds of people to use.
They don't have any bathrooms; they just have porta potties, right?
No, it's not a bathroom.
Do many people use the courthouse bathrooms or not?
No, we're not. We're not comfortable. It's not comfortable. There's cops in there that'll
deputies
harass us and say we're not allowed to be here unless we're utilizing the services.
Have you experienced that yourself, or is it just a sense that that's what would happen?
Absolutely, yeah.
Anything you want to pass on that we haven't talked about that you think people should know about?
That the services for the homeless in Santa Cruz are very limited. And it's so drastic to the point to where you have citizens coming and bringing us breakfast, lunch, and dinner because the shelter doesn't even provide food, clothing, or services. The only thing the shelter provides is porta potty showers.
Occasional showers.
Yeah, 15 minutes too. You know,
once a week.
You're limited. Very, very limited. So
am I accurate? Once a week?
Right. So if you don't have food stamps, you're pretty much burnt. You got to find a job or something. You got to do something there.
All right. What do you want me to call you on this recording? You can create your own identity here.
D, that's fine. D.
I'll call you D. Thank you, D.
There's something I've always wanted to say to you, men. How would you like to hear this warning again and again? Look out, take care, beware. Be careful whatever you do. Watch every step you take, or something could happen to you. Suppose that boys were made of sugar and spice, and girls were snails and puppy dogs' tails and nothing that's nice. They'd turn into women whose needs would be terribly hard to control. So you'd have to dress and behave like prisoners out on parole. Men, watch out, there's dangerous women about. Boys, beware, there's violent females everywhere. You read about rippers and rape in the news, then you hear the clatter of high-heeled shoes. Females are easily roused to passionate lust. You're asking for trouble, waiting alone at night for a bus. She could be the one, Miss Wright, the one you can't live without. She could be one of those ones your daddy warned you about. It could be a friend who threatens your body and life. Mm-hmm. It could be your teacher, your lover, your mother, your sister, your wife. Mm-hmm. She's used to the fact that you don't fight back or run or shout. She's one of those ones your daddy never warned you about. Men, watch out, there's dangerous women about. Boys, beware, there's violent females everywhere. They crawl along curbs in their Mercs and Jags. They goggle at porn and toy boy mags. They go to the football riot and then sin cigarettes, whiskey, and wild, wild men. Cover your legs, remember to button your shirt. For if you're attacked or abused and you take the woman to court, the coppers are women, the judges are women who say you were dressed for sport. The doctors are women, the lawyers are women who say you were asking for it. Every day you open the paper and it's another man battered or raped or murdered and dumped in a ditch. Babies and boys and old, old men, when will it end? Degradation and fear and pain that women inflict on the men. Oh, what a crime, what a bloody disgrace to have to fear half of the human race. But look around, the lovely women about outnumber the dangerous, menacing ones. There's never a doubt. Do they raise their voices or try and find the cause or the cure? No, they only say, I'm not one of the dangerous ones for sure. Men, for girls, there is no joke in this song. Boys, for women, oppression has gone on far too long. Could you bear, as we do here, to walk and live and love in fear of dangerous men?
And that was called B-Side by Peggy Seeger, again, from Period Piece. So I'm talking with a resident here at the Benchlands who's concerned that the area could be addressed better if people were cleaned up, if there was not a lot of debris, if there was some grass planted, because he feels that the city might make some accommodation or... But he was saying no one cares much. But if they did care more, there would be a difference here. That's what you're maybe what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if this place is clean, like, they don't, there's nowhere to put these people. No, they're just going to scatter off into the, you know, like, when they cut this down, everyone's going to scatter off into the neighborhoods, and they're going to start getting arrested more. It's just going to, it's going to create a big old thing.
You know? No place to put folks, so what's the whole point of scattering them? So in the meantime, why not, you know, establish a place where people can be...
People,
I mean, there's no shower facilities.
But, I mean, the, it starts off with your own personal area, like, you know, like,
and your own personal area is where it begins.
You look at these people's stuff. Look at all the clutter. Look at all the stuff we got.
A lot of clutter.
Anything that could be, most of it considered trash to a normal person, but to these people, like, that stuff, like,
to a normal folks, maybe, what other people here might consider valuable possessions looks like trash.
Yeah, it does look like trash. And so these people are like gathering all these weird things around them. Then if the cops come down here and tell you to leave, you can't take it with you. You're just gonna have to leave it here. You know, right? Who's gonna carry all that fucking junk?
And when the police come and tell you to leave, you are stuck with abandoning property that you might want to keep. But how could you do that? Because it's where you.
See, there's mental health concerns with this stuff. Like, normal human be like, people aren't gonna.
And it's also a mental health issue.
Yeah, this whole thing is a mental health issue. The whole thing is mental health issue, man. That's all it is. These people can't function properly. I mean, they can't clean themselves. They can't clean their property. They can't do anything that's considered. No one's talking certain, like, basic, you know, niceties of humanity. You know what I mean, right?
And you're saying that the folks here have trouble even keeping standard decency. Of course, it's kind of hard in a campground to do that.
No, it's not. Armies all over the Navy, all over the world have done them for centuries.
Right, but they do provide facilities, right?
They make them themselves. You carry your bivouac. You carry your own stuff. You clean your areas. You flatten out land. It's pretty simple.
The Army carries its own facilities, bivouacs on the land. You're a military man. You've done this.
I've been in the military, I'm just saying that's there. People that have been transmigrating, you know, throughout, you know, the world, in different areas. There are areas that we've inhabited. You know, when we've roamed, we always have. You know, kept the certain, you clean your stuff up. You know, we've been able to do this a long time.
Keep your stuff clean has been sort of the motto and a practice.
Mongolians never lived above, and like they were barbarians. They were considered dirty to some people, right? But if you actually went to their camps, they didn't have trash everywhere.
Barbarians did not have trash camps, yeah. Even though they were considered.
Say Mongolians, you know, they're considered barbarians.
Mongolians were considered barbarians, yeah.
They're pretty civilized people. They lived in tents their whole lives, most of them.
Except when they decimated cities, of course.
They were warriors and stuff, yeah. They lived in years, but, you know, like,
yeah.
And they took over, you know, but they weren't disorganized people. They're organized people, you know, right? They lived outdoors their whole life. And they didn't, you know, they don't accumulate junk. You can't just pull up this and leave.
Can't just accumulate junk. It's just not going to work, this man is saying.
If the neighborhoods, if the people come by, they see if they come down here.
People in the neighborhood see this.
They see a nice fucking little, you know, plot of land with a fucking, you know, whatever you got a tent on.
They see a nice plot of land.
You got flowers growing or something. You got things all raked up.
And if they see something nice raked up with flowers.
They're not going to be so quick to judge.
They won't be so quick to be hostile to the situation.
But it's really easy to be hostile to someone who's all dirty and fucked up.
And easier to be hostile to folks who are grubby and in a trash area.
You have contempt for them immediately. And so it's really easy to be mean and cruel.
And it's easier to have contempt for such folks who are living in squalid circumstances.
Yeah, it is, you know. And that's just what poor people out throughout the world have experienced, you know. You can be brutal to them because they're dirty.
And this gives you the excuse to be brutal to those folks. Question that this resident has is, if you are given a 3-day warning, take it to court and fight it. I've actually haven't heard of this being done in any particular case in any of the other camps.
I'd go right to the courthouse.
I guess you could claim residency over a month's period or something.
Prove that area, you know. I've
prove the area.
I've been a resident there for this. Some people live here like a year. People, they've been in continuous residence in the place for a year.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that qualifies as a camp.
Some have lived here for a year. I think they try to bully you away. That's what they do.
I know they think they do. They lie to you.
Yeah.
Tell you all this stuff. Those guys didn't have to leave. They didn't have to leave. If they would have taken the three-day notice, they didn't fight it. They didn't get an injunction by a judge to stop them, because that's illegal. If a cop comes to tell you to do something, right? And something like that, that's a legal action taking place. Their boss in that circumstance is the people, really, right? And the people being represented by judges and such, I mean, and the DAs, right? The judge being the overriding figure that has okayed for them to go out and given their power. The judge gives them their power over
you would,
the people.
You would think so, yes.
Right? So you can go in there and you can go to the judge and be a judge, a civil judge, and be like, hey, I don't think this is legal.
So the judge can stop a 3-day notice.
These guys have to give me a...
And that has been done in other places,
yeah,
for sure.
They have to give me residence. Yeah. They have to give me a place to stay. They can't just uproot me like that and maybe leave my stuff You know, there's laws. But they in Watsonville, when they moved those guys in the levee there, they had to go down there and give them housing and shit. Not, but not permanent housing, just hotel stuff, whatever.
Temporarily, yeah.
Temporarily, they have to, you know. So, like, the fact that they did that, I think they just told those guys to move down farther, what they did. They didn't tell them that they had to leave. They just told them they had to move down farther.
They keep moving them, as I understand
yeah,
it.
So they didn't tell them, they understand, they didn't evict them from here. So they from that spot they did. But even that, I think that still falls. It's a very loose. But Santa Cruz is always like that. If you don't know about the police systems here, they'll lie to you. They'll cheat you. They're very.
How long have you been yourself a Santa Cruzan?
I was born here. And the cops have committed all kinds of fucking atrocities here.
If you ever want to talk about it, let me know.
Yeah, man, they're bad. They killed all kinds of people here, man. They killed kids. They killed homeless people. Routinely kill homeless people, you know. Fucking at least like a couple times a year, you know. It seems like they shot that poor kid down in Aptos, 14-year-old, with a 223 right in the chest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was horrendous. That's what they did. He was on drugs, acid. Like that was there was over policing, like incredible police state shit. Like,
yeah, and they never suffered any consequences. Here's another flyer for you if you want it.
Militarized police force just gunned down child children.
Yep.
You think his parents were stoked? He called the cops.
Sean Arlt.
You think their parents were glad they called the police on that? You think they knew? Yeah, they were the fucking protect and serve, huh?
Yeah. Shoot first, and then murder.
Murder of a child. You know what I mean? Then they cuffed up his body. He's obviously dead. He's on the ground like. There's no muscle control, and they've got the knee in his back. Stop resisting, and the lady's like, "Why'd you do that?" And he's like, "The dog." And they're like, "What the fuck? This kid with a knife. He's on drugs. Like, dude, he ain't gonna sit there."
He's talking about the Sean Arlt killing.
They could have walked up and just took that knife from that kid, dude.
Crazy as
fuck. Right. You know, well, that's the shit they do here. They get their cowards. You know, they come down here. That's 15 of them, 10, 15 of them. You're one cop by himself. I guarantee you'll not walk down there. They won't do it. And there's nothing gonna happen to him. They're just fucking cowards.
Paranoid.
Because they're such foul. They know they're such foul people. That's why. If you have nothing to fear, if you're a righteous person, you don't got nothing to fear, bro.
Well, there's also a false reputation that this place is a dangerous place.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it is. It can be if you're a fucking piece of shit or a fucking weirdo. You mean like sometimes that's a, for the most part, I've seen the people that get it around here are people that are just such fucking scum that they just can't be handled, and they get bucked out the system. You mean that's the deal. I've never seen really no innocent person get fucking hurt down here. Never. You mean. It's always someone.
You haven't seen innocent folks hurt here.
Fuck no. It's always some fucking one that's fucking deserved the fuck out of it.
People who have deserved it have gotten it.
But what
occasionally
about,
something will crack off, and then someone that didn't such deserve it might get something, but eventually it'll even itself out. You know what I mean? It'll even itself out. Like, the motherfuckers get fucking, they get paid every day for their bullshit down here. You know what I mean? Not every day, but I've seen it. It comes. You know what I mean?
What do you think about, Nolan, somebody that's got, he's got a definite mental illness.
Oh, he's fucking nuts. Yeah, he's fucking
and
nuts.
And it's but I've been with him in rehab when he's got his clear head but I mean it's like
I can't stomach him. I can't have him around.
I just have to turn him
straight around. We'll leave this conversation here.
I'm a woman on wheels, but I still got my brain. I'm gonna tell you how it feels to be your own railway train. Roll down to the corner, put on your brakes. I'm gonna tell you what it takes to be a woman on wheels. Roll on over the holes, bumps and cracks, roll on. Remember that day we were running for the train and my tire went flat. Roll on. That man over there, the one under the hat, trying so hard not to stare. You get used to that, still better than looking, then looking away. You get that every day, a woman on wheels. Roll on, pity me and I'll pity you, roll on. Now let's talk about some of the things that you can't do. Roll on. When it comes to curbs, when it comes to stairs, I've got my special words, and I don't need prayers. When it comes to the shops, to reach the merchandise is a major exercise for the woman on wheels. Chair that can levitate, roll on. Race up ramps, run downstairs, wouldn't that be great? Roll on. went down to Greenham. I was cutting the fence. Cops pulled me out of the way. Then they waded in, said you'll never get arrested. A little lady like you. I says, who are you talking to? I'm a woman on wheels. I said, hold on, I've got my rights to demonstrate, roll on. Next time I went down, I took a dozen bolt cutters and a dozen wheelchair mates, roll on. I want to be alone, but I'm always under care. I've got this urge to roam. Me and my chair, we're together for life, not together for love. And there's things I need more of. I'm a woman on wheels. Roll on, so many places I can't go. Roll on, lie in a field with a flower, or walk on a beach with the sand between my toes. Roll on. Well, I need you, but you need me to tell you about a different view of the world you see, about the pain I feel, about the fight I've won, about how to do some little things you think can't be done. Roll on with the deaf and blind, the lame and halt. Roll on, there's money around. Help us all, it's a crippled system, holds us back, keeps the woman on wheels off the mainline track.
And that was Woman on Wheels, written in 1987. And Peggy wrote something about that in this selection from Period Piece. That's the album it appears in, which was itself... I'm not quite sure when it was put together. But here's what she writes about the song. When the camp was first established at Greenham, see Carry Greenham Home, there was only a flimsy picket fence surrounding the base. And Greenham Commons was an area in the early 80s. It was the site of a RAF occupational training unit in 1942, 8th Air Force, 51st Troop Carrier Wings HQ, and became a 9th Air Force base in 43, and then became home to a series of fighter and troop carrier units, including HQs of various various different divisions and so forth. According to one article I'm reading, the entire common is access land, an important green lung for the people of West Berkshire in England. And it it was protested by women who fought to ban the bomb and encircled the base. And that perhaps is what this, I would not know perhaps about it, is what this song is about. As time passed, Seeger continues, the dangerous peace women faced an escalating obstacle course of barriers, walkways, rolls of barbed wire, and guardhouses. By 1987, the fence was 8 feet high, but quite easy to topple. Just apply a strong push to the concrete posts, followed by a hefty pull, and the chain link fence sagged low enough for you to walk over it. Of course, cutting the fences made for an easier entry, to say nothing of the deep satisfaction gained from hearing the lovely, soft, sensual scrunch produced by a good set of bolt cutters. That's either what we were doing on Circle the Base Day. That's what we were doing, bolt cutting. And Jennifer Jones was there, headmistress of North London School, architect, suffering from MS, and very articulate about herself and her wheelchair. Jennifer Jones, the woman on wheels. So it's about her. And it's about Roll On, Jennifer Jones. So at a Huff meeting a week ago, we had a long conversation with Reggie Meisler, which I'm going to now play for you, because we kind of went into some of the intricacies of strategy around what to do now that the Coastal Commission has stalled the OVO, the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, but the police and the deputies and the local coastal authorities have not stopped the business of harassment of the folks in vans anyway, the ticketing of people in vans, the treating of harassment calls as genuine public service problems. And here's the conversation we had a week ago. Again, Reggie Meisler was the individual who appealed the oversized vehicle ordinance ban to the Coastal Commission. One of them, anyway.